this is Damien O'Doherty with the Conference Call Podcast. We are extremely fortunate to have a special guest and a special friend, Rob Buccini. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me today, Damien.
I'd like to give you one of my big run-up introductions, but you know, you've got so much going on in Philadelphia and Wilmington. You know, I always think of it like a Maryland guy. And then when I'm in Colorado, I'm like, man, Rob's so big, I can see him from here. My favorite thing, in addition to all of your real estate and entrepreneurial and sports entertainment holdings, is just your love of your hometown and your role as a first citizen. I would love to know, is that like the role of first citizen? Sometimes it seems like it's Philadelphia. Most times it seems like Wilmington. You know, is that as hard a job as it looks?
Well, I was born and raised in Wilmington. My office is here in downtown Wilmington. We do have a small office in Philadelphia. And obviously, as you know, a bigger office in Chevy Chase. But, you know, my brother and I always say that our heart is here in the city of Wilmington. So, you know, when we build something here in Wilmington versus if it's Philadelphia, we bought the, as you know, the Baltimore Renaissance in Baltimore last
Thank
year.
Thank you very much, bud.
You're welcome. Helping the tax base for you there, Damien. Or, you know, something in Nashville or Dallas. Really, there's always an extra layer of focus in Wilmington. Just, you know, I feel so blessed to have been born here. You know, my parents were very modest means. The city and the state was incredibly good to them, and they're at the time growing construction company. And I just feel that being born here gave me so many opportunities. I played sports, as you know, was a gym rat, went on to play, you know, football in college. And I think that the greatest part of playing sports and growing up in Wilmington was just the diversity of experience that you had, diversity of people. You know, when you play sports, it doesn't matter, you know, who your parents are, you know, how wealthy, how poor, what your skin color is. You know, when you're on that basketball court or, you know, football field, soccer field, just matters how good you are personally. And I think that's really, at the end of the day, those experiences at a young age, you know, growing up in the Central Branch Y in downtown Wilmington, really, I think has shaped my view on, you know, so many just average things that I look at on a daily basis.
Yeah, again, I guess Wilmington's always been home to, you know, big capital or for a long, long time. And it's home to the biggest names, obviously, in public life. But I think you and Beth bring a certain, you know, cosmopolitan vibe, you know, whether it's from Beth's work in Soho and being in fashion to your work, really, I haven't checked the latest numbers, but you're one of the largest hotel owner operators in the country. So how do you balance that stick-to-itiveness and your gumption and your connection back home, but also seem to spread yourself all throughout the country and the globe as well?
Well, my wife, she's the star of our family and certainly much more visible. She owns a well-known woman's retail brand out of Soho called Kierna's a Bet. She has stores and now her own line. I think she's been in business for 22 years now. She you know, it's commuting back and forth to New York still, even during the pandemic. And she has an unbelievable work ethic. I think that's the good thing about our children. We have four of them between 12 and 17, two boys, two girls. You know, when we're at home at night, you know, while everyone's even we're watching the TV or, you know, lately, you know, in the kitchen in front of the fireplace, you know, we're always working. And that's the key is, you know, my wife, I married a fellow grinder. So, you know, one thing you learn about starting your business in a city like a Wilmington or Philadelphia or Baltimore, these aren't cities that are exploding in population. So in order to have a successful business, you don't have the demographics behind you necessarily. So what you do is you just have to literally every day you get up and grind it out. And our hospitality business, which is run by my partner, who you know, Dave Pullen, and Joseph Bojanowski is the president of our hotel management company. I think we're the 12th or 13th largest hotel management company in the country. We started 25 years ago. And again, you know, it's every day getting up, you know, in good times and bad times. You know, during the global recession or during the pandemic, you know, we've been able to expand our footprint. And, you know, the key to our business is we just have such good colleagues. And, you know, it just sounds kind of like trite to say that, but if you, you know, our senior management team, it's the same senior management team that's been with us for, you know, decade plus, and everyone works hard. And, you know, they're not a lot of high maintenance people. Maybe probably they would all, if they were on, they would say that I'm the high maintenance person of them all. But, you know, like I said, it goes back to, you know, as we mentioned earlier, sports. You know, we're grinders, and that's super helpful in a pandemic.
Ground balls. You're all ground balls.
It is all ground balls. No one loves ground balls.
But you also can't fool anybody in a family business, right? I mean, you're looking across at your bro, or, you know, I've seen your dad in the building. Right? Like, you can't fool anybody there, right?
Yeah, no. You know, it's sometimes I think, you know, my brother and I will get after it a little bit. We'll mix it up. We'll have words. And you realize, I think the people who have worked, I'm super close to my brother. And unfortunately, he's also my neighbor. You know, that's a curse. He hasn't learned yet. But anyway, the issues that we'll disagree with in work, I think the people around us know that can be deep-seated from, you know, 40 years ago. Like, I mean, that issue started when he was 11. So, and I never fully realized, you know, how difficult a big brother can be to a younger brother until I had two boys, and my brother has two boys, and you realize the older brother is just pick. And so my brother has a special bond with my youngest son, and which is great to see. But no, you're right. It's having family involved in your business, like being partners with my brother, and having been raised in a construction family by, you know, both my mom and dad have worked together for 51 years now. You know, it really gives you a really good insight on what's important in life.
You talk about sports. If I could just ask you some dad questions, how are you balancing sort of the technology demands of the kids these days versus the programming, you know, playing lacrosse, playing different team sports versus sort of less program time? You have any sort of philosophy as a dad you want to pass along?
Well, my wife and I had this discussion today because she was getting the team snap invites for all the spring sports teams. And when you have four children, it's a lot. And, you know, my girls are very accomplished horseback riders. I've got one son who plays tackle football. He's been playing tackle football since 10 years old. So, you know, probably not on the pediatrician's recommended list at the age of 10 to be playing CYO football when you're 60 pounds soaking wet and you're playing against guys that are 180 pounds. And then obviously basketball, lacrosse, and soccer. And we had this discussion this morning about what are the kids on too many teams. And my rebuttal is, in this world, especially during a pandemic, if they aren't, you know, aren't programmed for sports after school, you know, not just in school, but in their different leagues. You know, the youth sports is massive business now, which our company has a big exposure to both pro and youth sports. I feel that if they're not doing sports, they're going to be home playing Fortnite, you know, whatever else is on Xbox. You know, I don't have that issue with my girls, but the boys, I joke, they could get on a flight to China, which is what, 12, 13, 14 hours. If you gave them, you know, the Xbox or the iPad, you know, fully charged, we would be landing in Beijing and they wouldn't have to get off the flight. They could just turn around, you know, get enough time to charge the iPad up and they would be back. They'd be totally fine. Like, you know, we have to drive to, we have the Jefferson Cup soccer tournament in Richmond next weekend, 7th and 8th of March. And my son who's playing in it, you know, we'll have every ESPN app in the car up and he'll be looking at very little communication unless I'll, you know, ask from, or, you know, whatever sports apps, you know, Madden NFL. So it's hard to regulate because there's just not as many things to do in COVID. They're in the house more than they would. There's, you know, not many play dates outside of sports. You know, there's just a lot less joy in life. And when you have so much less joy in life, I think sports are a great outlet for sure.
Yeah, it's such a unique time to be a parent.
Just, as you know, we own the 76ers Fieldhouse in Wilmington and Philadelphia 76ers Fieldhouse, and we have, you know, 10 different sports teams, all sports based out of there. And we have been monitoring COVID very, very closely. We have not had one case of reported COVID spread from one teammate to another teammate. And, you know, we have every day 600-800 kids go through. They could be professional athletes that are home from the NFL. They could be basketball players. We have a lot of professional baseball players down there. But then we have all the youth sports, you know, women's or girls' field hockey, volleyball, you know, all the men's sports, boys' sports. And so the one thing that is apparent to me is that playing sports is very safe and necessary, you know, as it relates to, you know, the COVID world that we live in, that hopefully we'll hit a herd immunity over the next few months.
Well, I mean, you know, I just want, listening to you talk about sports, you know, I also wonder about your own career path. You've managed to have sort of a schedule of different enterprises, some related, you know, but others not. You know, how do you sort of set that dashboard for yourself? Because you could really, at your level, you can pick whatever you want to be on your dashboard, really. And so how do you, you know, what is on your dashboard and how are you managing that?
Well, first thing is I want to be involved from a work perspective in things that I find interesting and enjoyable, that I'm not hoping that at five o'clock comes so they don't have to think about whatever the endeavor is. And so for me to be successful, me personally, and my colleagues here, everyone's a little bit different at BPG, is that I really have to have passion about the project that I'm working at. And that's why anything in Wilmington, be it an office building, a multifamily apartment building, retail, it that has a lot of interest because of the impact it has on our community, and then the aesthetic design and how that can improve the city and make people feel so much better about their home. We get a lot of deal flow, as you know. Early on, I just wanted to be around the construction business. You know, I'm Italian. My grandfather came from Italy. He was had no money, no shoes, literally no shoes when he came here. He started out to pay for his bills in the construction business. So I think in my blood is just construction. I just remember as little as I could be, drive by a construction site, I could just sit and watch a crane or a bulldozer forever. So that's just in me. And that's how we started our business, was just our love of just being in the creative as well as tangible part of the construction business. You know, it's as a real estate developer and a builder and a manager, one of the things that's just so nice is that when something that's on a plan, on a piece of paper, comes to reality, it's just so rewarding psychologically, and then obviously hopefully financially for us, our partners and our lenders. So that construction will always, and development and and operations, be it a hotel or whatever it is, will always be at the core of our business, just because that's kind of what we're about as people. And we got involved in the Philadelphia Union as owners because we actually happened to own the land where the Philadelphia Union Stadium, Subaru Park is what it's called, is. And so we were just fortunate that the MLS and our partner Jay Sugarman knocked on our door one day and said, we want to build a MLS team in Philadelphia, start one, build a stadium. And the land that you all own seems to be the best possible land for our project. We were actually going to sell the land, and then the global financial crisis came. And once the global financial crisis came, we ended up contributing our land and the team as equity, and then have become a significant cash investor, you know, in the team. And it's been a really interesting, I guess we've been in business, this will be our 11th or 12th season. You know, there was only a handful of MLS teams with really kind of not great stadiums. And now you look at the stadiums that are being built around the world, around the United States for MLS. And, you know, LA just opened up a stadium, and their whole development project as part of stadiums, like $850 million. You know, we started the MLS, you know, I think the only soccer specific stadium was maybe a $35 million stadium. So that's been really interesting. And from the MLS, we got involved in more and more sports. That's kind of how we started with our new 76ers Fieldhouse, which, for those who don't know, is a sports complex. I think one of the finest in the country, full-size indoor turf field, a basketball arena, strength and conditioning facility, indoor track, and Nemours Hospital has a medical office there for anyone that gets injured, orthopedic surgeons, that type of stuff. We have outdoor fields. We'll continue to grow the outdoor fields. We'll deliver two more this summer. And what got us interested in that is we know the guys that run the Sixers, really good guy, one of my good friends, Chris Heck, who's the president. And we were able to structure a deal where they have their G League team based here, play their games. Unfortunately, they're in a bubble right now in Florida. The 76ers have had scrimmages, practices here, and we have their iconic brand on the side of the building. Great, brings a lot of hometown pride to those in Wilmington, having such an important sports team in the Philadelphia region, the Delaware Valley, having their presence here in Wilmington. The other thing is, with a big hotel portfolio, we've learned a lot about youth sports and the importance of youth sports as a business demand generator on the weekends for our hotels across the country. And we have hotels from Portland, Oregon, to Dallas, to Florida, all the way up to New York City. And, you know, the youth sports is only getting bigger. And unfortunately today, not as many kids go out in their backyard, three friends come over and they shoot hoops. You know, that really has transformed to, we're going to do that a little bit, but I'm going to be on a middle school team, an AAU team, a CYO team. So everything is just, you know, taken up another level in sports. And then
the backyard's just to beat dad up.
Yeah,
right.
That's, yeah, exactly.
That's the only point.
Exactly. So the field house in Wilmington has been an unbelievable demand generator for the seven hotels that we have
It's so beautiful. If you get a chance to just Google it.
And you know, one thing about, you ask about like work, the team that runs the field house, and it's grown from the original team of three people, Javon Wesley, Steve Cavalier, and Trevor Cooney, who's a famous Syracuse basketball player in his 20s. He single-handedly carried Syracuse the 2 years he was a junior and senior to the Final Four. And, you know, just really impressive athletes, but now are businessmen. And none of them had any business experience. Like, they literally had not run anything. So he said, okay, here's a $40 million asset that's going to have, you know, 500,000 people come through the door a year. And we think that you all, you three, the original three people that started it, have the ability to drink from the fire hose, take any, you know, we never ran a facility like this before. There was no manual. There's only a couple in the country. There's one in Northern Virginia, the St. James. So, you know, there was no manual, and we said, we'll just figure it as we go. And the team down there, the operation team, has probably grown to, you know, 15, 20 people, depending on all the people that are in there running the different sports. And I think every one of them down there is, this is their first job, and they've just done an unbelievable job in making this place financially viable, and then a huge boon for the community. When I say community, it's not just maybe the suburban soccer player that's getting dropped off in the Volvo, but we have a city soccer league where we're pulling really, really good athletes into our best teams down there that would maybe never have been able to get exposure to a soccer team or a lacrosse team because, you know, the entry fee is $4,000 or $5,000. And so we've partnered with people like Chase Bank and Nemours Hospital. Huge.
I saw that. That's such a smart deal.
And we will not turn anyone away. So if you don't have the $4,000 to pay for a lacrosse travel team, and you have the desire and it's in your stomach, we will let anyone play. And, you know, we
have the scholarship funds. That ought to tell you all about youth sports, is that the big banks are right behind it. Makes perfect sense for everybody. They're a great community partner. You know, now I don't know if I cut you off from your full role, but I would also consider you very much a master plan developer. You talked about construction. I've seen people that would consider themselves in the old days, like city fathers or first citizens, as we call them, you know, really try to make deep, investments in their community, and then also try to bring leaders into government or into nonprofit service into that community. I mean, it's like it's a role unlike I've seen, because you really do play a master plan development sort of role in not just the assemblage of the properties, but then the design and then the activation and programming, but then you're pulling all the neighbors in and you're getting the community to pitch in themselves. You're getting the politicians to step up their game. It's a really unique skill set you've developed. And, you know, I just wonder what kind of burden it is sometimes. It's a lot of work.
My dad was so disappointed when I did not become an engineer in college. He first generation to go to school in our family, and he's has two engineering degrees. And when I told him I was going to Cornell, I was gonna be a government major, he's like, what are you gonna do with that? And I said, let's focus on the fact that I got into college. So he was so disappointed that, and I just didn't have the mind to be an engineer. I still don't. And all of the.
See, I think of you as a social engineer very much. I mean, you're really mixing it up.
I don't think you'd want me, you know, to design in your high-rise concrete structural system. But you know, the thing you learn is who is good in that business, right? And as you know, running a business, you just want to surround yourself with the best possible people. And I think our construction company, BPGS, they have just some really, really, really bright people. And that when they give it their stamp of approval, any project, I'm like, well, I know there's no way I could have done a better job than they did in the design, structural integrity, things like that. But I do love architecture. My mother, all growing up, had a good, I think, interest in architecture. So I think just being around her, you know, driving around my dad in cars at the different construction sites when we were kids, you really got a good feel of like, oh, this is a great architect, this is great architecture, or this is really more utilitarian. But what happened in Wilmington was really interesting, and Joe Biden has touched on this many, many times in his campaign. You know, we had riots in 1968. We had I-95 came down the middle of the city and divided the city, probably, certainly not in a way that you would have done today. And we never recovered from the riots, then the big malls and the tax-free shopping around the perimeter, like the Christiana Mall. It just sucked everyone from the downtown. And so our downtown really struggled mightily from a quality of life standpoint. We had great businesses. I think we have 7 Fortune 500 companies that are based here, which for a city the size of Wilmington is, it's almost unthinkable. You know, we've got obviously the DuPont spinoffs of Corteva and Chemours. We have Wilmington Trust, which is now part of M&T. We have AstraZeneca's, you know, North American headquarters, Navient, Sallie Mae, Ashland. You know, I could keep going on with these just large business. You know, JP Morgan Chase has a massive presence here, as does Capital One and Barclays, and Goldman Sachs just announced they're opening a few hundred person office here. And we've got great fintech. But what happened was, it was like a suburban office park. Everyone, you know, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and 2000s, they just came down, parked their cars in the garage, and after work, everyone left. And when we were starting to develop here in the city, you know, we were frustrated as to why no one stayed, you know, past 5. And my brother one day said to me, you know, I was upset that, you know, at 5:01, the parking garages were cleared out. He's like, Rob, the reason no one's here at 5:01 is there's nothing to do. And I'm like, that's a pretty basic concept. Like, there's no beer garden, there's no breweries, you know, there's no hip hotels, no, you know, there's only a few restaurants in downtown. So what we did, which no one, you know, people were like, oh, what was your business plan? What kind of research did you do? I mean, there was no research that you could have done that said, oh, if we build a brewery, you know, like there's now multiple ones in the city, or a massive beer garden, or we have thousands and thousands and thousands of residents living in our apartments. There's no study that said, if you do this, this will happen. And this is why I think it's really helpful to be from the hometown. We just have just the resolute belief in the place that you grew up, and also a little bit of a chip on the shoulder. You know, we're in the shadow of Philadelphia, and but you know, it's great people here. And so we just started building things that we were able to raise money from. The time we had, you know, we had no money. I mean, I think at one point I had $80,000 of credit card debt, and I'd spend, you know, every couple Sundays, okay, that if I transfer my credit card debt from Nations Bank to Bank One, you know, all these banks are no longer around, I will get 0% interest for the next 30 days. I don't know if you're ready to just get this checks in the mail. I mean, I did that for like,
that's like a first state of Delaware credit card. Yeah, exactly. that we learned at the University of Delaware, I think.
Exactly.
Financial management. But
the first 7 years, you know, transferring money, so I'd have to pay interest on my credit cards. So, you know, in that way, certainly Delaware was unbelievable for me. I think it cost a couple of girlfriends. We think the girls like, man, this guy has no chance of being successful if he's got this kind of credit card debt. And this company's really struggling. But we were able to raise money at the time from lots of our college friends, and our parents were helpful, and Dave Poland's parents, his uncle, Abe Poland, you know, just kind people. And it started to work. You know, you get a little success and a little success, you're like, and you just did more and more. And so now, in the city of Wilmington, I mean, we've got, you know, 25 restaurants that are just great restaurants that didn't exist before, 30 apartment buildings that weren't here 10 years ago, you know, got live music venues that have been shuttered for 40 years. And what we really, really have benefited from, if you start on the ground level, we've had really good mayors. We've got an unbelievable mayor now in Mike Prezicki, early mayors, Jim Baker and Jim Sills, and Lisa Brunt Rochester, who is a congresswoman. Her father is a legendary city council president who really took me under my wing at a young age. And he told me, Ted Blunt is his name, said, son, and this is one day I came in, I asked for a bunch of different approvals and I needed financial help from the city. And he told me, son, before you can kick ass, you have to kiss ass. Which I love that, because I went in, I was really demanding of him, And he's just a great guy. He's a legendary basketball player from Philadelphia, legendary HBCU basketball player, played with Earl the Pearl Monroe, and just a great guy. If you met him, you would never know that he grew up poor, because he has that air of just being raised with a butler, especially if you go out to lunch with him. But anyway, he really taught us about the importance of being deferential and respectful of our local elected official base. And then we've had great governors. You know, we have a great governor right now, John Carney, Jack Markell before then. You know, we're just couldn't be more supportive. And we've got two great senators. You know, we've got Chris Coons, and we have Tom Carper. And then it's also, you know, always helpful to have the President of the United States. So, you know, when we started all of this, as you know, helping out with us along the way, our whole plan was to really just get everything running really smoothly, get the President of the United States to come from Delaware. Which is just crazy. You know, we have
for people that just need a little catch up here, like, what essentially happened is this huge, all this people were doubting Wilmington many years ago. Rob was at the center of, you know, pulling this thing back together. And the amazing thing is it just blossomed and crescendoed right as President Biden is running for the presidency, winning. And then they can't do the convention. So guess who's hosting the convention? Rob Bacchini and the great people of Wilmington, Delaware. My reporter friends at the Washington Post, Annie Linsky, she said, you know, that Jack Markell trail is fantastic. And she, you know, they really liked Wilmington. And you guys got your act, you guys and gals got your act together at such a momentous time. You couldn't even imagine it.
Yeah, and we didn't have much when the convention really was switched from Milwaukee to Wilmington. That happened in like a week. And so just being on the hotel side and, you know, all the media outlets, and we're the owner of the Queen Theater, which is where Joe Biden's headquarters, basically the headquarters of the campaign was. And then it's where every person that was a senior official, you know, before he took office, came to be presented as, you know, it's insane to think that, you know, Janet Yellen, you know, is hanging out on Market Street. And if you were on Market Street 10 years ago, you're like, you know, there were tumbleweeds, you know, going down Market Street, and, you know, to be in the center of attention. And the great thing about Joe Biden, well, like all of us Wilmingtonians, he's a hometown guy, much like Baltimore, where he just has such pride. And so he keeps coming back. We love it when he keeps coming back, because it just keeps the focus on our great city. You know, you love every morning, you know, you see CNN or Fox News or CNBC, you know, broadcasting from Riverfront Wilmington. And that, you know, Riverfront Wilmington is one of the reasons that our mayor, Mike Brzezicki, is the mayor. He was the, you know, the pioneer with colleague of mine, Mike Care. So, you know, and the one thing that I was reminded someone yesterday, you know, there's always this concern of gentrification, which we could touch on a little bit, you know, how we've been able to successfully navigate that. And I think have a really overall positive view from all corners of the city. But when Riverfront Wilmington was built, which is, you know, now, I think it has, we have about 3,000 residents that live there. There's three hotels, you know, I don't know, several million square feet of office space, tons of restaurants. It was an urban wasteland. And there was a concern, well, is this gentrification? How's it going to affect the dynamics of the city, the voter base? And what I was so proud of to be a part of it is that not only, so if this didn't exist, I don't know where you would have, you know, the Democratic National Committee, and it wouldn't have been in Wilmington. It could have likely been in Philadelphia because we're so close, right? I don't know, maybe it's at the Constitution Center. So what was so satisfying to me was to see the first female, the first Black vice president announced on the riverfront. And that just was such a special moment, right, for every person in the city, especially, you know, the women and the minority community in the city, to have this moment in time here had we not gone through, you know, the incredible efforts, and the state had not spent the amount of money they spent on building the roads and the sewer system and the river walk, just never would have happened. And we wouldn't have had this moment. We won't, we have all these young women today and women that are not so young. They're just so proud now to have been part of the Kamala legacy, building legacy.
Your timing was incredible, but at the end of the day, right, it's just, it's the residue of a lot of hard work on behalf of a lot of people, yeah. You know, from you to the president. And, you know, it's amazing. Amazing.
Thank you.
I think I went over our promised time here, but I hope we can have you back and dig a little deeper sometime soon.
Okay, if the ratings are good, I hope I didn't cause a crash in the ratings.
You're gonna make us global, and what we think we're expecting owing to Beth. That's why we want to get Beth in the first couple minutes, because we're hoping to pick up some support in the metropolitan
Facebook fans or whatever, Instagram or whatever. Yeah,
somebody that's got some sway, right?
Yeah, I'll have to ask her tonight if she'll post the link.
Yeah, she'll want a full listen. If we delete me out, you know, no. it's my wife and I looked at each other. We had let you go, but we had, I think Laird took us up to a charity event, and Alicia and Beth are talking together. I'm hanging out with you. I'm like, man, I think I have made it for 15 minutes. Yeah. I have made it.
you're too kind. Obviously, you know me much better than that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the conference call. We're going to have you back soon.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.